In the second hour of the show, Under the Radar here on Radio Islam International, we're talking annexation, we're talking Palestine, and we're talking also about a trend that people were not too aware of. The article in Haaretz recently brings to light perhaps a phenomena that has been happening slowly but surely in recent years. The article that was published in late May reads, after losing hope for change, top left-wing activists and scholars leave Israel behind. They founded anti-occupation movements and fought for the soul of Israeli society, but ultimately decided to emigrate. The new exiles in this piece told Haaretz how they were harassed and silenced until they had almost no choice to leave. And among the names that are mentioned in this particular piece, and perhaps there are other names that fall under this category, it says that the well-known names no longer living in Israel are the curator and theoretician Arila Azoulay and her partner, philosopher Adi Ofir, who were among the founders of 21st Year, an anti-occupation organization, and refused to serve in the territories. Anat Beletsky, a former chairwoman of B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, Dana Golan, former executive director of the anti-occupation group Breaking the Silence, planner and architect Chaim Yacoubi, who founded BIMCOM, Planners for Planning Rights, literary scholar Hanan Hever, a co-founder of the 21st Year, was active in Yesh Kuvul, and Ilan Pape, a one-time candidate for the Arab Jewish Hadash Party and a member of the group of new historians who left the country over a decade ago. And there's one more name here, amongst others, Yonathan Shapira, former pilot in the Israeli Air Force, who initiated the 2003 letter of the pilots who refused to participate in attacks in the occupied territories and took part in protest flotillas in the Gaza Strip. Now, one of that long list that we are fortunate to speak to this evening to get his thoughts on annexation, which is obviously the big talking point at the moment, but also his personal journey and his reason for falling perhaps into this trend of individuals. I don't think it's coordinated in any way, leaving Israel behind because of the situation they see the country, or the direction the country is in or heading, is Eitan Bronstein Aparico, who was one of the founders of the organization called Zohrot, which translates into remembering, and did excellent work to uncover and speak about the tragedy and the crime of the Nakba, and make this prominent issue within Israeli society, or at least bring it to the attention of wider society. And we're fortunate to speak to him this evening, joining us on the line from Brussels, where he has entered into a kind of exile, which he'll explain to us in a bit. Eitan, I thank you so much for speaking to us, and good evening.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for having me here.
For us to appreciate the journey, and for us to appreciate what led you to this particular decision, ultimately, in recent months, perhaps we start off by talking about yourself. I understand your journey starts, in Argentina. At some stage, you would have made Aliyah to Israel and settled there, gone through a journey of your own, as you progressed, started various initiatives. Just give us your journey in a nutshell.
Yes, true, I was born in Argentina with the name of Claudio, and my family decided to do this aliyah, to immigrate to Israel, to live in a kibbutz. They were fascinated by the idea of the kibbutz. They were young communists. I was only 5 years old, and back then everyone had to change the name into Hebrew, Israeli name, so I became Eitan when I was 5. And then I grew up as a, Israeli in the kibbutz. When I was 18 years old, I never questioned the issue of drafting the army. And And only after that, in fact, at the end of my service, it was the beginning of the first Lebanon war, the invasion of Israel in Lebanon in 1982, and I was jailed for the first time, refusing that participated in that war as my first reserve in the army. And then I was jailed twice during the Intifada, but my last, let's say, crisis with Zionism was in October 2000 when Israel killed 13 demonstrators, citizens of Israel, the beginning of the Second Intifada. And then I understood the depth of the concept, the Zionist concept of a Jewish state, that this is a place only Jews can be equal citizens with full rights, and Palestinians will never grant this equality. And that's when I started the hope a little bit after that to tackle really the main component of the Israeli foundation, which is the Nakba, the displacement of most of the Palestinians and destruction of both of the localities. And we did a big job and great job in changing the discourse on the Nakba in Israel. So this was my journey, political journey, until we arrived at that point that with my wife, some 1 year ago, in fact, decided to move out, but from Israel, because mainly because she couldn't have it anymore, the situation, the political situation, also the economic situation for us, it was becoming very hard with trying to survive from working in our field. You know, it's as professional activists, it's very, very difficult. So, yeah, we decided to move out. She found a job in Brussels, and I followed her.
And again, to just appreciate deeper the work that you were doing, and perhaps how this was received, or actually not so well received, in the state of Israel. What exactly was Zohrot, the idea behind it? Just to expand on what you've said already, and the kind of practical work that, or dimensions this took.
Yes. So the HOT was an organization, it is a full organization, exists of course, that took the mission of bringing to the Israelis the history of the Nakba, which is also, in our concept, is also our history. It's not like Israelis like to say, but it's a Palestinian narrative. It's not a narrative of a nation, it's of course identity of a nation, of the Palestinian people, of course, but in the history, it's also the history of Israel, of course, because without the Nakba, Israel would not become what it is. And as Israelis, we know almost nothing about it. In fact, in schools, until today, they hardly speak about the Nakba. When I started the organization, they spoke zero about it. When I was, for example, in school, they never talked about it. I didn't know anything about it. And I have to give you a small anecdote that I myself was jailed 2 or 3 kilometers from one of the remains of one of Palestinian village named Kakul. And what I knew about it all my life when I grew up there is that it was a crusade fortress. And only after I started the fort, so I was more than 40 years old, I learned that this was a Palestinian village, that I knew physically. I visited it so many times. It was a place that I grew up there as a child, growing up, and I never knew anything about it as a Palestinian place. So this is one example that happened for so many Israelis. Nowadays, I think, because of our work and others, work, it changed, basically, like really fundamentally changed. We organized tours to those places, we post signs to indicate those places, and we made videos about it, we asked Palestinians to come and speak and give their testimonies from those places, how they were expelled, how was the life in those places, and it was the first chance ever for Israel to learn about those places. And this changed dramatically the discourse in Israel about the Nakba. Still, the issue of the right of return for the refugees that we of course supported was not changed yet so much. In Israel, it's quite a taboo, this issue. So unfortunately, it didn't bring much closer, let's say, the future with the possibility of justice for Palestinians and so on. But I think the work that we did was really very important.
Now, a question that I think is raised in the Haaretz piece, but as I was reading the initial parts and even before I came to that question, the same question kind of occurred to me, which was, did you yourself go on a, and perhaps other people mentioned, but you could speak obviously much more authoritatively for yourself, go on a journey and you changed, or is this a story of the change that occurred in Israeli society? Because somebody might argue that, if one has to go right till the time of, or just after the Balfour Declaration, and, plans were prepared from, or maps were prepared by the Zionist movement at that stage already, they indicated maps that showed the entirety of what was historical Palestine, and perhaps a bit more than that as well at that stage. So this was the nature, or this was kind of spelt out from Zionist leaders from those initial days. Is it necessarily that the state of Israel has changed, or has it just reached what some people would say is its logical outcome?
Yes, I agree with you that since it's the outset of this project, even before Israel exists, this was not a break or a big change from or big surprise of what happened in 1948 at the Nakba. In fact, it was planned. There were the Haganah, the military forces of the Yishuv, the Jews that were organized before 1948, they already had the village finds by intelligence that they created for hundreds of Palestinian villages ready for the day to attack and to expel those people. So it was pretty much planned and visioned by the Zionist leaders. But the thing that I think was the change that happens now, or in the last years, that reflecting this article in the Haaretz, which also, of course, it's only the tip of the issue, because there are thousands of Israelis that became non-Zionists. And this is, I think, because of the process, like most socio-political process in the society itself. Like many societies, there are people that at one point start to see differently their past, their own past. Even here, I live in Belgium, and now there is a hot issue here about the struggle over the colonial symbols here. And this is something also that we talk with many Belgians here, and they tell us, yes, in school, we never studied really about the colonial times in Congo. So I think in many societies, this change happened, and in the Israeli society too. And this is what happened to many people like us, that we grew up and we started to see and hear all kinds of things or read new material. I think what you mentioned earlier, the new historians played a very important role in it, in this process, because after we read the work of those new historians, we started to say, okay, so what it means for us as a society. And exactly the mission of our work was to try to take those books from the new historians and to bring them from shelves of the books, to bring them down to the reality of the civil society, and try to educate or re-educate ourselves about our own history.
Ethan, how would you quantify this trend. There's a significant names mentioned there in that list, and many people, when we talk about these organizations, one would think, and it did strike me as a surprise that many of these prominent personalities associated with such high-profile organizations are no longer there. So it's certainly something significant. But how do you quantify this? You suggested there that this is the tip of the iceberg. Is this, overall, I mean, if we're looking at people coming in, immigrating to Israel versus, people who've decided to make the move away from Israel, is it still, the exodus perhaps still in the minority, even though it is significant?
No, I know that for some years, I don't remember where I took this information, but I think it's known that for some, at least 10 years or more, it's steady this kind of trend that more Israelis are leaving the country than the number of people that are immigrating into Israel, doing Aliyah, what is called by the Zionist term. Now, of course, most of the people that are leaving the country, I guess they leave for, reasons of work or, I don't know, other reasons, long travels or whatever. But what I can tell you, obviously, and this I know from people, that because we are in this media and speaking around us, but thousands of people in the last years, I think since the government of Netanyahu, more than 10 years already, it became stronger, and it has to do with a very big notion of despair, a feeling of despair, no really hope for a change, substantial change from inside. I don't want to underestimate all the work done by Israelis, and by the way, I still include myself in this, and still, our project is doing things also in Israel, and we will continue working in Israel. And I appreciate very much so many friends and comrades there doing amazing work. But I think there is a very wide understanding among us, those who left Israel, or even those who are still there, that a real change, like real change in the regime, the Israeli colonial regime, will not happen from inside. Not from the Israelis, and unfortunately not also by the Palestinians. The Palestinians resist, and they very respectful what they do, and they try to do, and they so many victims in this struggle. But unfortunately, the forces from within will not bring the change. It will come only from outside. And many people with the most our notion or non-Zionists, they are in such a despair that many of them decided to leave Israel, and so many Israelis left to Berlin or other places in the world, non-Zionist Israelis, and they are also, of course, in Israel. Many more non-Zionist Israelis today comparing to the time that I was, in high school, where you could count maybe on one or two hands the number of Israel is Jewish, Israel is not Zionist. And today we have thousands of us. So it's a big change.
And the despair that you note there, what one is, the political climate and how the state has moved in a particular direction, but in addition to that, we talk about how there's an isolation of people who express ideas that are against the norm, yeah. How there's ostracization, sometimes perhaps bordering on violence. Tell us, what forms does that take?
Yes, of course, it's part of it, even though you have to remember that those more personal attacks on people are on the more leaders of those organizations. So some of us, like myself, we got death threats, for example, and some others, like from Breaking the Silence, were targeted personally with huge posters in the streets of the cities in Tel Aviv, like in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, with the name and the photo, image, and portrayed as traitors by organization ILP, which is this right-wing organization, very close to the Israeli government. So, yes, there are some people that were physically threatened, I think it's not far the day that it will cause real violence, even maybe death of killing of some of those people. And this is it's part of this process. Yes, indeed, for some people, I think it mentioned there in Arabic, for example, the pressure in the academia sphere, which I'm not there, but I know it, of course, very well. People like you mentioned before, Ariel Azulay, Liz Gordon, Ilan Pape, they suffered a lot as academics from the attitude of the Israeli academia, the institutions that blocked very much their possibility to work freely. So there is, of course, also efforts. There are efforts by the government or different authorities to block the discourses that we are trying to promote. And this is part of the despair among us, of course.
I mean, just a reflective question, and obviously this does not detract in any way from, you know, the really strong emotions and sensitivities that would have played out in yourself to make such a decision, and you know, the real experiences that fed to that decision. But in a sense, there is still perhaps in a case of whoever has the willing capacity to leave, still a level of privilege that a person can make make that decision consciously and still perhaps start a new life or continue with life, versus the primary victims in this situation, which are the Palestinians. You know, if people are forced out, it's as refugees, and if people remain, it's really a sordid existence with no real light at the end of the tunnel. How do you reflect on your ability to perhaps start in difficult circumstances a new life at older stage of your life versus the ongoing Nakba of the Palestinians?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for mentioning the obvious, but of course it's important to know that we are the people who left Israel. I'm talking about the Israelis that chose to live in other places. Most of us are, of course, privileged. First, we have a passport that enabled us to go somewhere. You know, but even within the Israeli society, most of the Israeli Mizrahim, Jews from Arab countries or North Africa countries or region, many of them don't have a passport that allows them to go somewhere else. But of course, compared to the Palestinians, of course, it's completely another reality. I can tell you that today we participate in the big demonstration here against the annexation. And we met young Palestinian refugees from villages that I, as a privileged Israeli and also as a researcher in that field, I visited the villages that they are from. They themselves never visited them, of course, because they were born in Gaza. And some years ago, they made it to go out in Gaza, and now they are trying to become legal in Brussels, which is not at all obvious they will succeed. 80% of them, they don't succeed. So Europe become also a very problematic place for them. So yes, of course, it's very, very, very different situation. I guess you know that the immigration in any situation is not an easy path. And I decided to take it, but of course it's very challenging. I have kids there in Israel, grandkids also. So this Corona time I cannot travel there. So I don't compare it all to the situation of people that were displaced from there, not at all. But it's, yes, it is challenging, of course.
A final one for you this evening, Etam. When we talk about annexation, which is obviously a looming discussion and accelerated steps in that discussion, and given the work that you've been involved in before, still fully invested, and you know, keeping a keen eye on developments, continuing with projects, what role do you envisage playing now that you're in totally different terrain? Do you still see or feel a very strong responsibility towards confronting the injustices there?
Me myself? Yes. Look, of course. First of all, my main identity is still in Israel. You know, not only that I'm an Israeli citizen, but, you know, most of my life I was there. I'm already more than 60, and it will be probably most of my life time I will spend there in Israel. This is the language I speak the best is Hebrew. My whole professional and activist career I did there, and I researched this country probably much more than most of Israelis. I know very deep the history of the, especially the 1948 Nakba. So I it's really the place that I invested my life in. I feel responsible to the continuous annexation and occupation and the further steps that Israel is taking. And today I was glad that I was invited to speak to the demonstration. I noted it, of course, that as an Israeli, I feel that I have a big responsibility to continue struggling for justice. I think every human should have responsibility to end any injustice. But moreover, when it has to do with your own nation, your own country, I want to tell you something that really honestly it's something that I do not because I oppose Israel and for sure not oppose Israel. I oppose the Israeli politics or the Israeli colonial project. But I'm not against Israelis as people that have rights to live as equals, to live in justice, of course. And in that sense, I think my project is not against Israel. As I see it, you know, I think I am for Israeli, maybe more than all those who are speaking as big patriots in the name of the nation, in the name of the Jewish people, or whatever. I think the interest of Israel is to quit this colonization and annexation and occupation, because this brings so much injustice and so much corruption to our own soul, you know. And to talk about, of course, the main damage of the real victims of all of this, that is Palestinian. So I think it's for all of us that I'm struggling. It's not only because I'm in solidarity with Palestinians.
Indeed. I thank you so much this evening for opening up, speaking to us about this journey, the work that you've done, the factors for you moving, and obviously your thoughts on where Israel as a state is at the moment, and how you continue to see yourself playing a role, important role at this critical juncture as the threat of formal annexation looms. Thank you very much, and hope to speak to you once again in the future, Eitan. Have yourself a good week ahead.
Pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And that's the founder of the organization called Sohrat, or Remembering, that was founded about 20 years ago, two decades ago in Israel, Eitan Bronstein Aparico. And his discussion with us this evening centering around recent Haaretz article that spoke about how top left-wing activists and scholars are leaving Israel behind because of disillusionment with the trajectory of the country or what they thought it was, also their personal journeys from perhaps seeing this as a land of promise to, you know, seeing, you know, opening up new intellectual dimensions and seeing what perhaps they held in high esteem previously, no longer what they thought it would be. So interesting phenomena that he describes this evening as he speaks to us from Brussels.